This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Melissa Idris and I've got Ibrahim Sani here with me. 9:35 a.m. on Monday morning, the 23rd of May. Every Monday, we have Pressing Matters. This is the show that takes you beyond the headlines of the day and provides you analysis from people from the press corps. Now, joining us on the show today, we've got P. Gunasegaram, former editor of Kini Biz, an independent writer and consultant. He's a veteran journalist, has been with the press corps for many years. Welcome, Guna.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about your opinion piece in Malaysia Kini. Now, you wrote following the Sarawak state elections, the results of which were quite devastating for the opposition. Barisan Nasional retained its two-thirds majority in Sarawak. It won 72 out of the 82 seats at the 11th state elections, whereas if you compare, DAP only won three seats. DAP won seven seats while PKR won three seats.
If we're into fractions, right, BN didn't win two-thirds. BN won nine-tenths or close to nine-tenths majority. That's what they're looking at.
While we're at it, right?
I think what I was trying to do was basically look at why the opposition did so badly. So I think there is also an age-old problem here, which I shall just go into in a little bit. But also one thing to remember is these are state elections. So state elections, Sarawak issues will be the ones that will be the main factor to consider, not so much things like 1MDB and federal level problems.
But do you think that is the case? I mean, isn't that the case with every state, even though it is state elections or national elections, that generally we've seen in East Malaysia the problems of Putrajaya doesn't really affect the everyday folk, right?
Yes. Although, in the previous state elections, there might have been a lot of issues with Taib Mahmud, you know, at that point of time, very long tenure and so on and so forth. And the other factor is that is Adinan himself. He's a new man at the top. And I thought he played his cards pretty well in terms of positioning himself as a person who's all-inclusive in terms of both race and religion. And then his early stance against corruption, against some of the timber barons and so on. So he was saying all the right things at that point of time. He was at the same time very pro-Sarawakian, but at the same time courting the federal leadership and getting a lot out of it in terms of projects and ventures for Sarawak. So he must have been a pretty popular guy at the point of time during the elections.
And that's why it's rather important for me to ask this question. When you were saying that it was more of a state election, therefore federal questions were not necessarily the central issue. Malaysia doesn't have a midterms election. We don't replace our Congress halfway through the general elections. So this is the closest that Malaysia can get in terms of trying to suss out a general election kind of sentiment. Does it mean that this Sarawak state elections have no bearing whatsoever and we shouldn't read too much into it in the general election?
I wouldn't say that it has got no bearing at all. I think there will be a certain amount of bearing on the sentiment in Sarawak towards the federal government. You know, but at the same time, I think it is important to remember that it's a state election and therefore it does not have any bearing on the federal position in terms of parliamentary seats and so on. But I think one of the important things I think one has to realize is that, Peninsular Malaysian parties have traditionally only done well in the urban areas. They have not really had a foothold in Sarawak. And I believe that part of the reason for that is that, Sarawakians just don't like Peninsular Malaysian parties. So they are Sarawakian first, and then maybe, whichever community that they come from, second. And in order not to be unfair to Sarawakians, that's also a stance which is taken by a lot of Peninsular Malaysians. For instance, we had a former deputy prime minister saying that he was Malay first and Malaysian second.
Yeah.
So this kind of sentiment prevails throughout. So, but look at the way Barisan operates in Sarawak. For instance, UMNO is not there, MIC is not there, MCA is not there. They form alliances with the local parties there. You know? So, and the local parties there represent a diversity of Sarawakian interests. You know? So perhaps, you know, if Peninsula or opposition parties want to have a chance in Sarawak, then perhaps that's the kind of route that they should be looking at. You know?
But so, so the idea of coalition in Malaysia is long-standing. Malaysian parties just love to coalesce with other parties and make this coalition. But because of that, there's no one true, you know, king in that sense in terms of dictating the policies. Because coalition partners, they tend to have to, you know, they have to give way for the other parties to come to agreement.
But I also think that, I mean, the idea for tie-ups, so to speak, between like Sarawak parties, Sarawak-based parties and West Malaysia-based parties, so to speak, is to foster that greater understanding between what the state needs and Putrajaya. So if there's no communication, right, if you only have Sarawak-based parties in Sarawak for the ruling coalition, then there's no communication there. How would Putrajaya know what the state needs?
Well, I suppose it will be as part of the consultative process within the coalition itself. So I think, say, if you want Sarawakians to have a proper voice in the state, then it should be Sarawakian parties which are representing them. I think that's only natural, isn't it? So, and they have a great suspicion of Peninsula Malaysian parties, for instance. You know? So
with good reason, you know, with good reason.
Yes.
Having said that, falling back to what you said earlier, Guna, that, you know, Adnan is rather famous. He was, he's strong against the timber barons, anti-corruption, and now he has gotten this much kind of mandate.
Yeah, I call it a super mandate.
Yeah, it reminds me of a person in 2004, the elections, yes. Actually.
I mean, it was reminiscent of Abdullah Ahmad Badawi in 2004 when he won the biggest victory ever for Barisan Nasional in polls post-elections, post-independence. And because he could not keep to his promises that he made to the electorate, I mean, he also had the ignominy of chalking up BN's worst ever victory in 2008. You know? So things could change. But the main thing is, in this case here, I think part of the reason why the opposition does not make headway in Sarawak, I believe, is because they are importing Peninsula Malaysian parties wholesale into Sarawak. You know, I mean, so that's not something I think the Sarawakians are going to take lightly to. The better policy would be to let the Sarawak opposition develop internally, and then you do an alliance with them. But that's a pretty difficult thing to do because DAP, for instance, is not likely to give up the easy urban seats that it's getting in Sarawak. And why should I give it up to another party? It diminishes my number in parliament. But you have to look beyond the short-term kind of things here if you want to develop a viable opposition in Sarawak. You know?
Well, the other thing that that's been raised when we... Ahead of the Sarawak state elections, we spoke to a number of pollsters. So Merdeka Centre was one party that we spoke to. Ibrahim Sufian?
Yeah, Ibrahim Sufian.
Ibrahim Sufian was the Merdeka Centre spokesperson that we spoke to, as well as James Chin from the Asia Institute in University of Tasmania as well, who came down as an independent observer. And one of the things that they pointed out was the fact that why the opposition didn't do so well is simply a lack of funding. Because when you think about, making headway in rural areas, you've got to need the financial backing for that. Just simply for logistics purposes, you've got to have that. Not to mention the fact that the caretaker government of the day had made announcements of infrastructure projects. You know, things that will improve the day-to-day life of Sarawakians.
Since when has funding not been a problem for the opposition?
That's true. But even more so though, in East Malaysia.
Yes. So I think you have to go beyond funding and to find a way in which you can reach the voters in the interior. You know?
Mm-hmm. And I think therefore this influences on how the Sarawak parties is going to influence the cabinet, for instance, is going to be interesting because we have the PBB ministers, including Nancy Shukri, including the Minister of Works, Fadilah Yusof, and all this. I don't know whether they will carry the will of Adnan in the cabinet as strongly as before, because it's difficult to see PBB wielding their influence in the cabinet through these ministers as opposed to, say, Adnan going straight up to the Prime Minister himself and demanding stuff.
I think that shift of power is going to be very important in this next few months, even years leading up to the 14th general elections. Yeah. And we were talking a little earlier about why the opposition did so poorly in this last, the 11th state elections in Sarawak. And I wonder whether a large part of it had to do with a lot of the bickering and they couldn't get their act in order when it came to straight fights in seats, etc., right?
Yeah, the strongest argument that the opposition is making right now is on the delineation of seats. And, one may have different opinions with the opposition parties, but the maths will be able to elucidate better.
Okay.
Guna, if you may.
Okay, just before that, I mean, within Barisan, there are no Peninsular Malaysian parties in Sarawak. But that's not the case with Sabah, whose situation is slightly different.
Yeah.
But that could be, if you remember, Sabah has been in the opposition, has been opposition ruled under PBB when it was in the opposition under Pyran Kitingan. So, I think there was a concerted effort to get in voters, and then the Royal Commission of Inquiry actually found that many voters were registered improperly, you know, in Sabah, and many of them were Filipina Muslims and so on. So that gave UMNO a sort of a beachhead in Sabah. But that same situation does not prevail in Sarawak now. But just the numbers, Sarawak population is 2.6 million. I hope you got the figures right. We were just doing some quick numbers just now.
Back of envelope calculations.
Yeah. Sabah is 3.5 million, gives a total of 6.1 million population. That's about 20% of the population. But the total number of parliamentary seats in Sarawak is 30. In Sabah, which has got a higher population, but still lesser number of seats, 24, for a total of 54 seats. Out of 222 parliamentary seats, that gives about one quarter of parliamentary seats come from Sabah and Sarawak. You know, population is around 20%. So Sabah and Sarawak have a slightly disproportionate number of seats relative to the population for parliamentary representation. But anyone who is serious about taking the government really has to pay a very strong attention to Sabah and Sarawak. You know, you need to have a fairly reasonable showing in Sabah and Sarawak to be able to take over the government.
Okay, so, you know, the parliament is the voice of the people. For 20% of the people to have 25% of the seats in parliament seems to me a rather reasonable kind of number.
Until you look at Selangor.
You look at Selangor.
For instance,
Selangor has 6 million people, the same number of people that lives in Sabah and Sarawak. Selangor has the same number of people, yet they are only 10% represented in the parliament.
Yeah, so 21 seats.
Yeah, 21 seats, right? 21
against 54 seats.
Yeah, so 21 versus 54. How can you justify 6 million people of Malaysia having 10% of representation, but at the same time you can justify 6 million of people having 25% of the population of the people? So this is the problem with the allocation of seats, and I think the federal government is fully aware of this situation.
Okay, so your argument is in terms of representation for seats as well as why Sabah and Sarawak are considered to be the kingmakers for any ruling party.
So they will be pretty much kingmakers, and you can't deny that. So anyone who wants to has to wants to take over government has to pay attention to Sabah.
So now, do you think? I mean, the reason why we're doing this show is because, you know, whilst the media attention has moved away from Sarawak post the elections earlier this month, we still think it's very important to take a look at what's happening with the state and the power shifts that's happening now with Putrajaya as well. I think now that Sarawak we have seen such a showing following the elections. What will that mean now for Sarawak's voice in Putrajaya? Will we be seeing more of a shift in the power that they hold? So Sarawak's aware now that they are kingmakers, right?
Yeah, I think Sarawak is always aware that they are kingmakers.
Remember,
I
mean, we were talking, Ibrahim, I think there were rumours circulating, so we spoke about this on the show, that there was talks of perhaps a second deputy prime minister, talks of perhaps suggesting there'll be a post created of a second deputy prime minister, one that will represent the voices of East Malaysians, for example.
Yeah, this news came out when the youth leader of PBB says that because of the mandate that has been received by Tan Sri Adnan, Tan Sri Adnan has the necessary arguments, i.e. the right locus standi, to argue for the post of deputy prime minister. Now, this is an argument made by his members of his party.
But an interesting one, because it really goes to show the shift of power. Now they have a greater voice.
Yeah, but it'll be a bit too early for that. You know, I think they have to maybe perhaps have a very strong showing in the parliamentary elections, the federal elections. So that's still 2 years away for Sarawak.
Right.
So I don't think Barisan Nasional is about to give a deputy, Prime Minister's position to Abdullah Satem at this point in time. If at all they would consider such a drastic measure, then it will be after the 14th general elections. And also remember that we are not just talking about Sarawak, but we are also talking about Sabah. Now, what if Sabah gives you a solid showing in the federal elections
With UMNO inside Sabah, there's a lot of ties in terms of UMNO ruling, governing the Barisan Nasional Coalition.
So Sabah and Sarawak, you see, Gunai, a major difference between the two states, right?
Yes, there is a fair amount of difference, but I think there is Sarawak has got a rotating chief minister, right? So there are different chief ministers who different people who become chief ministers from time to time.
Sarawak, because again, when you say Adnan is his own man, Adnan has distanced himself from Taib Mahmud, the previous chief minister. A lot can be said. They are still one unit, one entity. They are connected by.
I think a lot of people have forgotten that Adnan Satim was part of Taib's administration previously, but he still has this kind of honeymoon glow around him, because, you know, he came into office after a long rule and hopefully wanting to shake things up. Lots of locals love him in Sarawak. So I think that honeymoon glow, how long that will last and whether he can maintain what he's been promising in the elections. For sure.
Well, there's also the story of the Sarawak-owned enterprises like Cahaya Mata Sarawak and also
what it means
Sarawak
for
Energy.
Business, right?
Yeah, what it means for business in that state, considering that this election means that they are given the mandate to actually get more revenue for the state. I think a lot can be said about them.
I think pretty much a lot of the Sarawakan local issues have not been settled yet. You know, so yes, Abdullah Satam did a good job of getting a lot of development projects in Sarawak. In particular, the Pan Borneo Highway, I think, which is called, which will be one of the largest infrastructure developments in the country ever. And there has been a lot of call for Sarawakians to get much of the contracts now. So, but in terms of corruption, that's still a major issue in Sarawak. In terms of uneven development, major issue in Sarawak. You know, although Sarawak is not exactly a poor state, there are huge pockets of poverty in Sarawak and a lot of underdevelopment in Sarawak, you know, especially among the indigenous people. And then the oil royalty thing has not been settled as yet, you know, and so that too is still an issue. So there are a lot of things in Sarawak which have not been settled as yet, and there are a lot of issues.
Yeah, the oil royalty thing, that's true. It suddenly went kind of quiet during as a topic of discussion during the elections, but I'm sure that's something that Adnan Satim will be looking at going forward. 9:56 right now. Guna, thank you so much for being on Pressing Matters this week. That was P. Gunasekaram, former editor of KiniBiz, independent writer and media consultant right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani for The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.